It's Success Happens on 930 WFMD, a discussion with leaders who share their pathways to success. Success Happens with your host, Jen Charlton.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Success Happens. It's such a delightful morning, and I'm so excited to be here. We are actually set up at the Frederick Fairgrounds, and the hustle and bustle of the beginnings of the fair and just everybody getting started for the day, it's so fun to be here. I always come in kind of after everything's set up and the throngs of people are here, and you're seeing all the workers set up, and I just want to thank our folks here from Clear Channel helping me this morning run the show from the fairgrounds. You know, this show is about how do we cause success, right? And I keep talking about that, and I think there's a number of things that are really important. I'm always a big believer that you have to first operate with a high level of integrity as a leader, and then you want to empower others and in your leadership. And to the extent that you do that, I think is to the extent you're more successful. I do think they are correlated. But also, this show, you know, we talk to leaders, and some of these people are running things, like, I don't know, counties and you know, agencies at the state, and so they've got huge responsibility with people and resources, financial resources, certainly the resources of taxpayers, and how they manage their business of government is really important. And so I love talking to, I'm going to call them politicos, but I love talking to them in a leadership function, not as a politician, because politicians get on their stump and they start speaking all this stuff they know you want to hear. But at the end of the day, what really matters to me is, are they getting it done? So I am so thrilled this morning. After almost 3 years of doing this show, I'm pleased to announce that I have Jan Gardner, County Executive, on with us this morning, and it's really a pleasure to have you here, Jan.
Well, thank you for having me, and good morning to all of your listeners. It is an interesting experience to be here at the fair as it's opening up in the morning and to see everybody running around trying to get things in place. But I appreciate being on your show and talking about leadership and about getting those complex issues that are out there solved.
Yeah, and you know, we years ago there was a saying, all roads lead to Rome. Somehow we've come up with this idea that there's only one road, and it's my road. So you should really get on my road. And it's created a lot of division and upset. And I think to the extent that we can learn from one another, whether it's Republican to Democrat or it's older to younger, right?
Or good ideas come from the general public. I mean, there's a wealth of knowledge and expertise in our community, and you never know who you're going to run into when you're out at an event like this one, and somebody who will give you a good idea and may even volunteer to help execute that idea.
Absolutely. You know, one of my pleasures, and when you were county commissioner, president of the county commission, I was on the board of the Commission for Women as a commissioner, and that was my first foray in government, really. And I learned that in commissions and boards, so I have a real passion for those, that there is an opportunity to be a part of the process as a civilian.
Yes. And so we have about 60 boards and commissions in the county who provide advice and recommendations on a whole host of topics. And then with all of my key initiatives, whether it's been Livable Frederick or What Should We Do with Solid Waste, I've always had a steering committee or a citizens committee where I've tried to engage a broad group of stakeholders, different political parties, different work experience to bring that kind of input to the table. And I think that's made all of those processes better in the end. It takes longer because, you know, you have to have that opportunity for people to debate the choices that you're going to make. And often we go around the county with those advisory teams to get some input from the public. So, you know, you need to go to the people, not necessarily always have the people come to you.
Right.
And so it takes a little bit longer. But at the end of the day, I think when you meld a variety of ideas and suggestions and ways to get something done, you end up with a better product.
Yeah. And I have to sometimes watch myself because I like to say I'm the get it done girl, but sometimes you cannot rush things that naturally have to take that, what we call, organic approach, right?
That's right.
You have to honor that process.
Well, now, from a day-to-day management standpoint, you know, we have division heads making decisions.
Sure,
and
getting it done.
The chief administrator officer will make decisions, and I'll make decisions. So there's lots of decisions on the day-to-day things. But in the complex issues about where do we want to head as a community to address our solid waste stream, something like that, we try to get that public input on.
I think that's great. So, you know, there's so many different directions we could go. I was looking at some data for the county. You know, we're at 243,000 some and change folks who live here as residents. That hasn't grown a lot, I don't think, since my data was maybe back in 06, 07, 08. It was about 240. So I think we've held steady a little bit.
We're probably closer to 247, 248 now. You know, we had a dip in the economy there with a pretty significant recession that started around 2008. And we're just now starting to climb out of that. It's been a long, slow process. And some people actually, depending on what economist you listen to, tell us it's 10 years, we're ready for potentially another dip in the economy. And so I don't know that that will happen.
I don't agree with that. You know, it was interesting. I was listening to Chris Murray earlier, and he made an interesting note or statistic that he shared about the median income in households has been rising.
In the last year or two.
Which is good to see, is really good to see.
Because, my background's in finance and economics, so I actually watch our revenue flow every month. And property tax revenue is pretty stable. It's simple math. You can figure out what your revenue is going to be from property taxes. But income tax is a whole nother story. And so we've really seen income tax be pretty flat the last couple of years.
I bet you have.
And so because I don't think the recession has recovered wages, and so people have gotten jobs. Some people have gotten jobs at lower wages than they may have made before the recession. And I think another dynamic that people don't talk about is baby boomers. We have a lot of baby boomers retiring, and they're being replaced with people, sometimes not entry-level people, but mid-level people, and they're
lower wages.
Their wages are a little bit lower. So I think that phenomena is significant enough to kind of depress the overarching wage issue.
So, you know, I do a lot of work right now with adult services or aging populations, and just have a fascination with, you know, and I'm a huge believer, huge proponent that if we marry the talents, abilities, experience, and vision of elder folks with young entrepreneurs, that's a winner.
One of the great things that we're doing right now at our FITSE incubator, which I think you're familiar
with. Yes, I love it.
Is we have a new CEO and president, Kathy Brady. She's been there for about a year, and she has created these mentoring partners. So she has about 40 CEOs that are mentoring with these startup businesses every month or every quarter, and different people need different kinds of advice, whether it's raising capital or marketing or some other aspect of having a business plan. And I've met some retired people who are at that C level who have said to me, what can I do that's meaningful to the community? And I say, okay, can you bring your expertise into this mentoring program? So when you sit in the seat that I sit in, you can find a lot of ways to connect people. But you're absolutely right. We have a young, vibrant, active, and fairly highly skilled group of younger retired people. And so people think seniors, they often think frail, they think the county's going to have to expand services to people who are homebound or need Meals on Wheels or something else.
And there is that. Yeah.
But there's also this big population of people who are in that, you know, healthy, retired senior group who have all the energy and activity, but they have just a world and lifetime of experience. And I think if we can somehow harness that and bring that expertise to the table to solve our community problems, give people meaningful things to do, it will be a great success.
Yeah, I love that. I was a part of the mentoring program that we stood up for the Commission for Women over at Frederick Community College and the Woman-to-Woman Mentoring Program. And I think that's been a great model for other mentoring programs. And real kudos to them, the difference they're making with women who are struggling, you know, single moms or whatever they're going through, to try and better their situation. So commissions and boards are phenomenal, and I encourage listeners to get involved. If you have something you're passionate about, there is probably a commission or board dealing with it, wouldn't you say?
Yes, I would say that. Now, I will tell you, I really, sometimes we have so many great applications. There's a whole wealth of people who want to work on a commission. There may be one opening, but I do encourage people to apply for boards and commissions. And if you don't get appointed to the board and commission, they often have a number of subcommittees and other ways that you can participate on that topic area. So, I feel like we have had just a huge amount of citizen interest in these kinds of positions since I've been the county executive, and I think people feel that the work is very meaningful, and I've been really happy to be able to appoint some really great people.
Back to your point about volunteerism, I think that's the other component, is that there are opportunities to contribute where you know, people want to give of their time and talent. And it's just a matter of finding
what matches for them.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about this idea of the aging population. And you've mentioned a little bit in the 2020 that this futuristic kind of view of the county and where we're headed, that there's going to be a big expansion of seniors in Frederick County. And my question to you is, how are we going to make sure that they have, the equation is twofold. One, are they prepared for their own retirement and elder living?
You
got to be prepared, guys, okay? I will tell you, Mike Scarborough was on with me, and he said that there's only about 98%, about 2% of the population are really prepared for their elderly years.
You mean financially?
Financially.
Yes.
So you got to get prepared. And then the other piece is, what are we as a community going to do to make sure that we can care for our seniors, or they can live with dignity?
Okay. Well, we did for try to plan for this growing population of seniors is to do a Seniors First initiative, which has had a steering committee and meetings around the county, and they've made a series of recommendations, and we are going through those right now. We're looking at setting up and restructuring a whole new division of senior services to really focus on three different age groups of seniors, or three different kinds of seniors: that active younger group of seniors, people who may have some issues, you know, may still be living at home but need some support, and then our frail elderly, because the biggest percentage growth is in the people over age 85. So we're looking at how do we deliver services, and it's very different for each group. So restructuring what we do is one thing. We're looking at all of our senior centers and doing a review: is do they meet the need? Is this what people still want? And how should we be using them? And, you know, looking at what services we're going to need to support the frail elderly. And that's a lot of things. We've expanded Meals on Wheels quite dramatically since I've been in office, and we need more volunteers to deliver Meals on Wheels.
Well, there you go, you guys. Anybody out there wants to be help with Meals on Wheels? That's a wonderful
program. We have over 200 volunteers right now, but you know, I can provide money to add for the food preparation, but we really need to have that volunteer corps so that we deliver the Meals on Wheels. We've brought Citizens of Montague back into the county fold, which I think will help us to take care of at least some of our seniors who need assisted living care, which is not covered by Medicaid or Medicare, which not everybody knows. And we're expanding our home health areas. And I don't know if you're familiar with a program in the health department called AERS, which is the Adult Evaluation Review Service, where we have a healthcare worker, normally a nurse, go out and assess somebody in their homes and their ability to live there, and then connects them to services. And it's not just about
so healthcare. So that they can remain in home.
So they can age in place
and remain
in their home.
That's right.
And it's not just about do they need health services, but do they need other things?
Well, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I have with me today Jan Gardner, County Executive, Frederick County. And I'd like to thank our sponsors, Sweeties on the Creek and Xerox Complete Document Solutions. And we'll be right back. This is Jennifer Charlton with Success Happens. If you are out of the area and you'd like to listen live online, go to WFMD.com to hear our show Saturday mornings at 9 a.m. on Free Talk 930 WFMD. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and we are live from the fairgrounds this morning. I can't say that. And I have with me Jan Gardner, County Executive, and we're having a great conversation. I want to wrap around to something that people may not be aware of, but back to this idea of commissions and boards and the elderly, and frankly, anyone who needs someone else to assist them because they can't take care of their own daily activities. We call those people caregivers. And caregivers are angels. They really are.
They really are.
They are. And they're caring for our kids who need help. They're caring for our elderly who need help. And there's something called, it's really a council right now for caregiving, which will, as of October 1, the legislature mandated that a commission be created called the Commission on Caregiving, and that will start October 1. And it will be a resource for caregivers to access information and things. And so look for more information about that through the state of Maryland. And you can access it through MAP, Maryland Access Point, or you can access it through Department of Human Services, Department of Aging, Department of Health, and Department of Disabilities. They're all actively involved in this commission, and they're amazing, amazing people. So back to this idea that, you know, as we, whoever we are, if we need help, as a community, we come together. Now, where you and I might disagree, you know, if we were to talk about a politics kind of point of view, you know, I also believe that it's the people. I love that nonprofits take care of people in the community.
Yeah, they do. We have a lot of great nonprofits who we can connect people to. So when we go in with the AIRS program and evaluate people, we find out they need new appliances or they need some kind of other assistance. We can call the Community Foundation or SOAR or a number of other nonprofits in our community that we partner with to help serve people.
Tell people what SOAR stands for so they know.
I'm not sure.
I know. I can't remember. I just know it as SOAR.
It's
S-O-A-R.
O-A-R. And yeah. I think OA is Older Americans. So, but it's basically they provide resources to seniors of all kinds of things. So sometimes we find out somebody needs a new hot water heater and they can't afford it. So something like that could be acquired for somebody. But sometimes people need some ongoing care. And so,
and by the way, that ongoing care can be very expensive. So you may have to offset it with family members or loved ones in the community who come together to help our fellow you know, citizens. So, but this idea of aging in place, you know, if you look at, I'm going to transition now to affordable housing. You know, when you look at the idea that there's, first of all, a lower wage working population who needs to have housing. There's an elderly community who may not have prepared for their older years and they need housing. So how are we addressing as a county affordable housing?
Well, that's a good question because we've also done a housing study and clearly affordable housing for everyone is an issue and affordable housing for seniors is also an issue. So what we've been trying to do is to work with, there are certain developers who just do affordable housing and work with them to make projects that they want to do work. So 520 North Market, which was a county building for a lot of times, was school and a county government building, is now being converted into 59 workforce affordable housing rentals. And some of those will be specifically designed for seniors and for people with disabilities. And there'll be some...
But workforce?
It's workforce housing.
So these would be seniors who would be working?
Well, it's called workforce housing, which is people who, this is an all-age unit.
Okay, got it.
Okay, so it'll be people who are working between a certain income limit because they're not Section 8 housing. They're just, they get a federal tax credit, and as part of getting that federal tax credit, which helps them to provide the capital to build the building, they have to keep rents at a certain level. So
I have to say, I think that's a neat project. I've been in that building, and it's old. It's tired. But it has this formidable strength because it's built so long ago when they built him really, really strong?
So it's under construction. So we have at least six more affordable housing projects at some place in the queue,
okay.
Some of which are not announced yet. So we waive their impact fees.
Oh, nice.
And all of we try to support them that way. The city and the county have a policy to provide a pilot on taxes, a payment in lieu of their ongoing taxes to help keep rents low. And then there's the federal tax credits. We also can use part of our, we have a moderately priced dwelling unit ordinance that new developers can either build some affordable housing or they can pay a fee into this fund. So we use part of the money of this fund to help leverage these projects and make it work. So you're going to see at least two more pop up in the city of Frederick, and you'll see a couple of other places around the county. And about half of them will be senior only.
So if you look at it from a business perspective, you're investing in this housing. What's the ROI? Have you looked at it from a standpoint of, if we provide this housing, it saves us this much taxpayer dollars on this issue, or it makes sure that we're not covering the costs over here at three times the rate? Do you get what I'm asking?
Yes. And, you know, we don't usually look at things that way in government as much. The project may have an ORI, but not the overall arching thing. It's a little hard to capture perfectly because you don't. But keeping people in a place where they can live and be self-supporting and self-sustaining saves us money in the long run, because it does reduce people's needs to go into nursing homes and to other supportive services that government may be a provider of. Like you said, we provide some home care through government, but we also, there's home care out there through the private sector and the nonprofit sector. But everybody I talk to, seniors want to age in place and live in their own homes.
As long as they can.
That's right. Then when they can't live there, they want one of these smaller apartment units where they're not doing yard work and house maintenance, and where they still have transit or walkability.
And they feel safe,
obviously.
Absolutely.
But we're lucky that we have safe communities in our county, and we need to make sure we keep it that way.
Absolutely. Well, we're coming up on a break, and I just want to thank Jan for being here. If you'd like to call in, ask any questions, you can call 301-694-9363, 301-694-WFMD. And this is Success Happens. I'd also like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton, and I have with me this morning Jan Gardner. We are live from the Frederick Fairgrounds. I wanted to go back a minute and talk about your past, your leadership, your pathway to success. And, you know, with your finance background, obviously that has tremendous value when you're running a government with the budgets that you have. But when was it that you thought, I think I want to get into politics? What was the point in your life? Where did that thought come from?
Well, the thought actually came from some other people who suggested it to me.
Okay.
You know, in the 90s, I was very involved in my children's education and in PTA, and PTAs got very involved in advocating on school overcrowding issues. And I spoke at the Board of Education and the County Planning Commission before the county commissioners at the time. And I've always been somebody who's done my homework. I actually went to the county and read a few years' budgets, which probably no one has done before or since. And because, well, if you're looking to fund something,
well,
you need
to
know
where, stay awake,
you
but
need
that's
to know, you need to know where the money is, okay? You need to know how money can be allocated.
Right.
And so I got involved in advocating for schools. And when I started on my children's schools, I quickly became involved to the broader countywide issue and to how can we build and finance schools. So somebody actually suggested it to me. I still remember the first time somebody suggested to me that I should run for office.
And what was your response or thought?
My thought was, oh, I don't know that I can do that. I don't know if I want to do that. But it really, the more I thought about it and the more people talked about it, it became appealing to me, because instead of convincing other people to make certain kinds of decisions, I thought having the power of the vote was a way to get that done, and it became appealing to me. And, you know, politics is very different now from where it was 15 years ago, and so it was an interesting...
You mean it wasn't quite this disgusting back then? Well, I find it disgusting right now.
I think that when you campaigned, you talked about the facts of an issue, and now that's kind of lost.
Personal.
It's more about rhetoric. Yeah. Some people will say things that they actually know are not true in any way, shape, or form, and it has gotten personal. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I really very strongly feel that, you know, if you're running for office and you have children, that you should leave the kids out of it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, my kids did take a certain amount of heat when I was a county commissioner. And so one of the beauties of it when my children were growing up is they learned that there were other people in the world beside them, that it was important to be involved in your community. And I told my kids, if somebody says something to them, you say thank you and you walk away. And all of my children learned how to do that. And I think that has served them well. All those things have served them well in life. I think to recognize that we're part of something bigger than ourselves is something good, not just for teenagers, but for young adults and adults.
Well, and having grace. It's hard because I'm very intense, right? So I have to work at that. It doesn't come naturally to me to have grace, although I think it probably is more natural than it isn't if I allow myself to be really present to it. But, you know, we get this onslaught of negativity, and it gets us fired up, you know, and people know that and they use it. And here's what I want to say about that. It has no integrity. It has no integrity to just talk about things that aren't true or to go after people personally, stick to the issues, be able to support your argument, you know, be intelligent and educated and learned and prepared. Like a Girl Scout.
There you go. I was always taught to do my homework and be prepared. And so
I
tend to be over-prepared. And so.
And you can't know everything. You never can know everything.
You can't know everything. And so there have been certainly times in my life where I have said something that has not been accurate. And when I find out it's not accurate, I correct it.
Absolutely.
I mean, people don't expect us to be perfect.
Right.
But
or do they? I think that has become an expectation that has been, frankly, leveraged, and it's unfortunate. I think we need to cut all that out so that, you know, people like you and I can sit down and have a decent dialogue and agree on some things, disagree on other things, and walk away as friends.
Well, I used to say if you drew a line in the sand and put Democrats on one side and Republicans on the other, it used to be that 90% was relatively close to that line in the sand, and that's how we governed.
That's right.
And now we covered to the extremes. And I still think the extremes are a smaller portion of both political parties. And so I do think we need to be pragmatic and solve problems and listen to each other. So I'm a little more concerned because now people aren't listening to each other. And, you know, we can't have a dialogue if we don't listen, try to understand another point of view, and be willing to have that conversation in a rational manner.
Well, and I think there has to be a shift in how we dialogue, and it has to become unacceptable again to rant or speak over people or disrupt a town hall that, you know, a political figure speaking to his or her constituents. It's just so inappropriate, and it needs to become that again. But it's become the norm. You know, just seeing what happened last night in St. Louis, you know, this is very distracting and very disturbing. And so I think, you know, we can't have that violence. We have to be able to sit down and say, you know what, I got your point. I don't agree with your point. I got your point. So I digress. Let's go back to your leadership.
That's good. So anyway, I got into this on education, ran for office, and I've really enjoyed being able to represent the community. It is a big job. I mean, there are 17 divisions in county government, and you can almost spend all of your time on any one of them. You know, fire and rescue. We have a volunteer career combined system. Lots of conversations about how we should do things there. Ultimately, at the end of the day, we do all agree that we need to make sure people get the response they need when they call for help. We have the budget and finance. We have our senior services. We have other citizen services, water and sewer, solid waste. And the list just goes on and on and on of all of the different things that we do in county government. And so, you know, It is a big thing to manage. There's over 2,000 county employees. When I first came in as county executive, I knew there were morale issues in county government. I didn't know how deep they were. But for 6 months, I went out and met with employees. I went out and met with highway workers at shift change and went out and met
with
our
water and sewer.
What was their
concern? For example, what was their concern?
Their concerns were that they really felt that they had not been valued, that they could be fired at any time randomly, that they were going to be privatized. And so there was a lot of concern about the stability of their jobs, the stability of their benefits, the stability of those things.
So let's talk about that, though. So in that particular issue, let's drill down for a second. Is it better to have it in the current iteration as part of government versus being privatized?
The county has always privatized some things. For instance, we don't pave roads. Okay, we always do a contract for that. But for the things that we do every day, all the time, over and over again, we save money to do it in-house. So, for instance, we have 167 buildings in county government of all kinds, libraries, fire stations, office buildings. And we have an in-house team of people who do nothing but maintain and renovate those buildings. Okay, that saves us money than bidding that out, because we have enough work to do that every single day. We have 400 bridges in county government. We have a bridge crew. And we've bid it out, and we're cheaper in-house because we don't have – somebody in the private sector wants to make a profit, which, of course, you understand.
Yeah, you have to build that into the margins.
So it depends on what it is. But we do have about 100 or so people who maintain our 1,300 miles of highways and bridges in our county. It's a big job. So people think, well, all they do is plow the roads. Well, that's absolutely not true. There's so many other things we have to do between the signage, the guardrail, the striping, the pothole repair, trimming along the roads. I mean, there's a huge amount of work, maintenance of our bridges.
So total budget for the county is what?
The total budget for the county right now is $581 million. About 75% of our budget goes to two things, public education and public safety. And then out of the other 25%, the next biggest chunk is public works, which is highways, roads, transportation systems, vertical construction, and maintenance of our buildings. And then everything else falls out after that. So, you know, we have libraries and parks and the health department, which is really a state agency, but parts of it are county funded, and animal control and economic development. So there's a lot of things that we do that people take for granted. And we provide outstanding services. You know, we had 5,000 students this summer in our Park and Rec summer camp programs. We had over 10,000 people participate in the summer reading program in our libraries. We still have on average over 100,000 people come into one of our libraries every month. And so I think we provide great services to people. I think we provide them very efficiently. When you look at surrounding counties, our cost to deliver these services is much lower no matter how you measure it.
So when you look at this idea of live, work, and play, which mm-hmm. is something we all talk about, being able to live, work, and play in our community, it seems that we're committed, we're staying true to that commitment.
We are, absolutely.
Yeah, very good. I want to ask you something else, because I think that there's two controversial issues that the county faces right now. One is the downtown hotel conference center, and everybody knows I've been a huge proponent of that. Once they were able to work out all how the financials work, at the end of the day, that is a good project that's going to bring growth and economic development to the community. No doubt in my mind. In fact, I think to the region, because it gives some alternatives to the higher cost options. You know, I do a lot of events, right?
Yes.
And trying to find a good place that can house that many folks. You know, you're looking at Montgomery County or Gaithersburg, and it's just extraordinarily expensive.
Well, plus, we want to have those amenities and those services right downtown in the
right.
core of
they
downtown.
Can walk to the restaurants. They can enjoy all of those things that we love about live, work, and play here, right?
Right.
So we invite them in, and they can stay and do all those things. So I'm a big believer in that hotel conference center. We just heard that the Historic Society has gone ahead and removed, let's call the restriction around the tannery and not being able to take that down in order to move the project forward. So your quick thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a good project. I support it for many of the reasons that you support it. I had never been to an HPC meeting, the Historic Preservation Commission, and I went to one of their workshops just to watch. But I think you saw, if you had gone to those at every workshop and every hearing that they had at least a dozen businesses, large and small, in the community, different ones in each meeting that came out and spoke in support of the project. I do think that there's been some controversy with it. And the controversy was really about should public money go into the conference center. And as it originally was looked at, the hotel and conference center would be built completely and built and operated by the private sector, but there would be a public investment in the conference center. And under that model, the city would get 10% of the revenue of the conference center. There was a payback to that. Because there was so much controversy about it, structure of that was redone. And so the hotel and the conference center are 100% privately funded, privately operated. The government has nothing to do with it. No government money is going to that at all. So what public money is going to is to support infrastructure, yeah. The land. The city wants to own the land so they can control what happens there, and the parking. So from a county standpoint, we're investing in parking. We've invested in parking in every parking deck in downtown city of Frederick.
Seems appropriate.
Well, downtown doesn't work if we don't. Government runs parking all over the country. And there's parking revenue that helps to offset that. So I don't think it's controversial that the county is investing in parking and infrastructure. And so I think that's been removed. And I think that obviously whether the Byerly Tannery should be saved or demolished was a debate out there, with some people having strong passions on both sides. And, of course, we do value our history.
Oh, it's part of our culture.
In Frederick. And we want to we have an authentic, historic downtown city of Frederick, which I think is part of what makes it special. But there's a mix of old and new there. And I think the Historic Preservation Commission, for as much as people complain about them sometimes, has done a good job over time of balancing those competing interests.
Well, let me do offer that there is some concern from business owners that it is hard to do business in because of that organization. So at some point I'm going to have them on and dig into that a bit. But it can't be to the point where it's detrimental to business, I don't believe. But, you know, and if it's standing in the way of with all the regulations and codes and things, it becomes prohibitive. So you know, that would be an interesting conversation to continue. I know of one individual who said, I'm just going to pull my businesses out of the city. So, you know, that's something perhaps the mayor could speak to
yes,
as well.
Yes, I was going to say, the city's the lead on the hotel conference center. The whole approval process is with the city. The HPC is a city arm of the city. And so, the county hasn't been involved in those day-to-day details of it.
Now, the other issue, and we're coming up on break, so I want to just kind of set the stage and then we'll come back and talk about it, is this idea of, you know, I pulled the population kind of breakdown. There's a lot of data here. It would need to be interpreted. But, you know, in terms of the segments within our population that are, ethnic communities, I know that at some point I'd heard the Spanish community, Hispanic community comprised, I think, 23% of our population. So that may have changed since I knew that number. But the point being is there are substantial pockets of Asian community members and different. So we are a microcosm of you know, different ethnic groups, and people know this. My mother's an immigrant. She never did become a citizen. So I understand that whole world, having lived it as a first generation. But that being said, I think that there's a real concern that we are losing control of our laws and our communities when they're being taken over by illegal folks who have gotten here, I'm going to say, without integrity. You know, they got here however they got here. But if we're breaking the laws, it just doesn't work. At some point, it becomes a lawless society. And I'm a big believer that we need to, again, maintain integrity and control in laws. So I'd like your interest, I mean, your input on that. I'm interested in hearing what you have to say about that. So we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Success Happens. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions and Sweeties on the Creek. We're Scoop and Isle. You can go by and check out our goods. They're wonderful. Have a great couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Success Happens. This is Jennifer Charlton. I have with me today County Executive Jan Gardner, and we've been talking about a whole host of different subjects. And but before the break, started talking about immigration. I just wanted to make sure that we covered that because as a county, as a community, as a region, even this show goes to West Virginia and Pennsylvania and Howard County. So we got lots of different folks listening, and the immigration issue is important to us. And how do we solve it? So I asked Jan off break, so I'm going to get you to tell us your answer. Okay. Well, how do we solve immigration?
Well, let's first talk about the demographics in the county.
Yeah,
the Frederick County is about 75% white, about 10% African-American, and then the other 15% is almost evenly divided between people from Asia or Asian countries and people of Hispanic background. Now, obviously, there's a little bit of others in there. So that's the generic breakup. Now, if you look at the city of Frederick, it's different. So sometimes people wonder where the statistics came from, and it depends on if you're looking county or city. We do not know in Frederick County how many people may be here that do not have some kind of legal status. Obviously, there are many people here who immigrated into our country legally. We've always had some percentage of our population be African-American, Hispanic, and Asian. And so, I think many of those people are here legally or have some kind of work permit or legal status. For county governments, this issue has rolled down to being a local and state debates because the federal government has really failed to do comprehensive immigration. It's been talked about for many, many years. And so you see local governments trying to manage that. And generally speaking, when those laws that have been passed by local governments are challenged by somebody, and we've seen a number of them challenged in other states, particularly in Pennsylvania, where they wanted to say if you were a landlord, you could not rent to somebody who did not have legal status. Those laws were struck down because it was not something that local jurisdictions were allowed to legislate about. So that makes it pretty complicated. To the extent that law enforcement is locally involved, Frederick County follows federal law, and
I'm not quite sure.
I'm not quite sure how anybody anywhere can local jurisdictions can't write laws that overrule federal law.
Well, there's some people who are trying. There are some people who are trying.
But when they're tested, they just no matter which way they're going,
it just doesn't
work at the end of the day. So we see Congress now and the President of the United States, President Trump, talking about what to do with DACA, with the children who came here. And it looks like they may be moving in a direction to solve that problem. And I think that Americans generally have some sympathy to the fact that a child who came here when they were two or
four
or
six
had no say in that decision. And if you ask them to deport them to some other country, they might not even know anybody there. And of course, we've invested in public education and making sure those students
are
successful in our economy. So,
and I agree with everything you said. The only thing that's missing for me is, and we talk in business, we say stop the bleeding. In this case, it's stop the hemorrhaging across our borders. So you cannot fix that one problem without making sure that it doesn't continue, because there are people who take advantage of our kindnesses, frankly, and our generosity, and are looking the other way for years and years and years, to your point. This has been kicked down the road for generations.
Well, and this is why we have to have that issue of border security and the immigration policies of the country done at the federal level. I mean, I don't have any local control over the what you just have said.
Right.
Now, my grandparents, 3 out of 4 of my grandparents were immigrants. Mm. And, so most of us look back in our own families, We're a nation of immigrants, and we didn't used to have a whole lot of laws about immigration. We didn't really have immigration laws until about 1925, with some exceptions, like there were laws about Chinese immigrants before that because of the Chinese coming here to build the railroad system across the country. So I think those laws went in place in 1880 or 1890. I'd have to do some homework on that.
I don't know. I'm impressed you got that close.
Well, you know, that's my general U.S. history there. But I think you know, American citizens across the country have to really ask Congress to have an expectation that you will be functional, that you will pass a balanced budget, that you will address these comprehensive issues that are important to the country, deal with our national defense. These are not things your local elected officials have the authority or the power to do.
And I want to say something regarding the cost of government, because at some point, we can't take care of everybody. You know, we talk about no nation building. We get federal because I have a passion for federal. But then within our own borders, we compromise or we allow for or we tolerate certain things that are going on that are putting us, increasing our costs to care for these folks. And I've said for years, and I'll go on the record to all the thousands of people listening, those immigration issues aren't our issue. They are the countries from which they come's issues.
Oh, yeah, there's violence,
Colombia,
and poverty,
Guatemala.
In those
countries need to get interested in keeping their people in-house and in their country because they provide great schools and they take care of their people and they don't have some of the social issues that these people face.
There's no doubt that we still have a lot of people who come to our country as refugees, as asylees, as people escaping incredible violence that's beyond our ability to even imagine because of how we live in our own country, and poverty, people looking for work and people looking to be able to support their families. And so to have some kind of peace throughout the world, we have an interest in that as a country. But it's also very hard for us to manage that broadly. That's a controversial issue,
it
too.
It is, because they say, well, don't be nation building. But how do you empower these countries to make sure that they're caring for their own? And you know, listen, I have many friends from many cultures and many walks of life, and I love international people. I love the culture and the flavor and the foods. Oh, my gosh, that's why I have a weight problem. So, you know, it's not about not wanting that, but it is about being responsible for what we are responsible for, right? And at that note, I could spend all day talking
about
to you. Oh, my gosh. And it's just been so great having you here.
Well, thank you for having me on. I've looked forward to being on here before. And, you know, success happens when you do hard work and you do your homework and all the things that we talked about today.
That's right. Thank you, Jan. Thank you. You've been listening to Success Happens. I want to thank our sponsors, Xerox Complete Document Solutions, Sweeties on the Creek. We're scooping now. Have a great weekend. Come to the Frederick Fair. It's beautiful.
And it's the best fair in the state of Maryland.
Come on down. Have a great weekend.